The Joint Committee on Ways and Means to order for Monday, February 27, 2012. Welcome, members. Welcome all who are here. I believe Co-Chair Devlin want to make some welcoming remarks.
Well, everyone, I just wanted to indicate that my daughter, Renee, and my son-in-law, Troy, are in the back. Their last name is Nelson, but they are no relation to the good Senator Nelson. And my two youngest grandchildren, Barrett, who's up there in the air, who's two, and where's Cooper? I can barely see him.
There.
Cooper, who's seven.
All right.
So just wanted to introduce him. And you may know Renee's been serving in my office a few days during the last session, a few days a week, and there's a volunteer this session, too.
It's a good thing to have Amy and Renee there.
Yeah. And when you look at Renee, you can obviously see the resemblance between me and her.
Yeah. He was adopted.
On that note, we'll just caution the parents to be aware of the boredom factor for your kids. Don't let them get too bored with this. Members, we have a number of bills to go through, so we'll start off. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1538A. Representative Comp, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1538 expands and clarifies the duties of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission within the Oregon Education Investment Board. The measure transfers authority over dual credits and transfer credits from the Joint Boards of Education to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, effective July 1, 2012. The measure also transfers licensing authority of career schools from the State Board of Education to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, effective, again, July 1, 2013. There is a minimal fiscal impact to the Office of the Governor for rulemaking related to the establishment of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission's regulatory functions and for costs associated with the quarterly board meetings. The Governor's office states that no additional personnel service costs will be incurred in the first year and that additional staff support from, I hate acronyms, but I'm going to say them, CCWD, OUS, and OSAC will be used to carry out the duties of the Coordinating Commission. The Governor's office assumes that operations related to dual credit and transfer credits will continue with the current staff and at their present locations. The program related funding, positions, and unexpended balances of the private career school program will be transferred to the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission July 1, 2013. The Education Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1538 be amended and passed and reported, be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Whitson, please.
Thank you.
Chair, just a couple of quick questions. What effects will the change in licensing authority have on the private career schools, if any? And secondly, are there any changes in statutory authorization and protection of private career schools included in this bill?
Thank you, Senator.
We'll need staff to answer that.
You'd like to have staff
accurately
answer that? Enter and sign in, please, and if you need the Senator to repeat the questions, I'm sure you'd be glad to.
John Turbing, Legislative Fiscal Office, Chair Buckley, Senator Whitsitt, if you could repeat the questions.
Certainly. What effects will the change in licensing authority have on private career schools, if any?
Chair Buckley, Senator Whitsitt, there shouldn't be any change to...
Thank you for that. And the second question are there any changes in statutory authorization or protection of private career schools included in this bill?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Representative Thatcher, please.
I'm sorry. Thanks for your patience. These are kind of flying at us pretty quickly. I'm not saying that this is replacing any bureaucracy and actually maybe kind of expanding it. It just seems like in this next step it's unclear as to whether we're going to be getting rid of some of these other boards and commissions that oversee higher ed. And then there's also additionally some talk of adding seven new, allowing each of the seven public universities to have their own board. It just seems, going a different direction than we were originally speaking of. and streamlining.
Thank you. Does any member of the committee wish to respond to that? Or
Senator?
So you wish to respond to Representative Thatcher's comment or concern?
Well, yes. We're transferring, we're not adding any bureaucracy because we're transferring authority that's currently held by the State Board of Education to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. This is part of the overall consolidation, actually, of education from age 0 to 20. That's part of the overall governor's plan. It started with bills that we passed last session, like 242 and 909.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries. Close the work session. Open work
right
session.
Down there.
I'm sorry. Representative Thatcher, were you a no on that?
Yeah.
No, we open the work session if I need to record that Representative Thatcher was a no on Senate Bill 1538. Thank you, Representative. Close the work session. Open work session, Senate Bill 1543. Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1543 specifies that unspent bond funds from certain transportation projects must be reallocated to other projects. The bill also establishes piloting conditions related to tug and assist vessels in Coos Bay. The subcommittee adopted the Dash A-26 amendments to the bill, which allocates $5 million to Multnomah County for the Selwood Bridge interchange and allocates $9.5 million to Multnomah County for the Cornelius Pass Road project. Resources for additional projects will come from new revenue the Department of Transportation expects to receive from an interagency agreement with the Department of Administrative Services to purchase the driver and motor vehicle records. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 1543 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Whitson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, a couple of questions. What revenue does the Department of Transportation expect to receive from an interagency agreement with DAS to purchase driver and motor vehicle licenses? And what will DAS use this information for that's worth some $13 to $14 million?
I can answer the first one. I can't speak for DAS. I would invite Ms. Jordan to take the second question. Or maybe, Ms. Jordan, you want to take a shot at both of them.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Susie Jordan with the Legislative Fiscal Office. The Department of Transportation has an interagency agreement with the Department of Administrative Services for the Department of Administrative Services to purchase the DMV record at the fair market value of the record. And that fair market value is the new revenue that the agency will be receiving that they're not currently receiving. The Department of Administrative Services will then sell that record for a convenience fee of $3 on top of the fair market value that they're paying the Department of Transportation and use that to fund e-government.
Better follow?
Yes, please. Sell it to whom?
To those people that are now purchasing the record. That would be like insurance companies, that sort of thing.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing them before I call for a vote, I just want to thank Representative Reed and the others who worked so hard on this bill. That was a very complicated piece of legislation. Is there objection on the motion? Seeing no objection, carefully. Motion carries. Close work session. Open work session on Senate Bill 1591. Senator Thompson, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Buckley. Senate Bill 1591 transfers responsibility for selected rest areas to the Travel Information Council for operation and maintenance phased in over the next 2 years. The measure modifies the membership and powers of the Travel Information Council and makes changes to the policy of the Oregon Motorist Information Act of 1971. The measure also requires the Department of Transportation to transfer additional state highway funds out of the state share of the highway fund to the Travel Information Council for the operation and maintenance of the added rest areas. The subcommittee approved an amendment to adjust the location and number of rest areas for a total of 13 rest areas, including the three currently managed by the Travel Information Council. For the 2011-13 biennium, an increase of $2.4 million will be transferred to the Travel Information Council, and for the 2013-15 and for the future distributions, the increase is $7.1 million. The total annual distribution is $6.55 million or $13.1 million per biennium. Resources for the additional distribution is to come out of the additional new revenue of Department of Transportation expects to receive from an interagency agreement with the Department of Administrative Services to purchase the driver and motor vehicle records. The amendments approved by the subcommittee makes provisions to suspend or proportionately reduce the amount of the allocation to the council and modify requirements for the Travel Information Council's responsibility to manage rest areas should the collection of the convenience fee be suspended or reduced. The measure also requires a financial audit be performed by the Secretary of State and findings reported to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and Transportation and Interim Legislative Committees. Lastly, the subcommittee approved an amendment to decrease the Department of Transportation's expenditure limitation by $691,963 to account for the transfer of responsibilities to the Travel Information Council during the 2011-13 biennium. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1591 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Bates, please.
Just a question to the carrier, if I could. Do you happen to know if the rest area at the top of the pass at Government Camp is involved in this?
Yes, I do.
Is that the one on Government 26?
Camp? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Quick comment.
Please.
You know, a lot of people come into Southern Oregon from California. The first impression they get of our state is the rest area. These have been getting shabbier and shabbier year after year. And I stop on them regularly because I travel so much and I'm getting older. And they've been... Control yourselves out there. I know it's the only game in town and you guys are bored. Okay. But they are getting shabbier, and it's important they be maintained properly. They're not being done that way now. Yesterday, Senator Hass and I stopped at the rest area at the top of Government Camp on purpose to look it over. It's an embarrassment. It is an absolute embarrassment. If you've been up there, you drop it and just take a look. Don't stay. Okay? It's an embarrassment. Okay. So I'm glad this bill is coming forward. I hope this group can do a better job of maintaining what is, for many people, the face of Oregon when they first come to our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Callan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the committee had any report from the Travel Information Council about the three rest areas that they're currently managing, including one that's on an Oregon border with a different direction than the area that was just referred to. I've heard voiced some frustrations with the management of that particular rest area, and I'm interested in what the committee heard from the Travel Information Council.
Thank you. Representative Reed, would you like to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, I don't think we had a lot of discussion of that in the subcommittee. I have had individual conversations with the Travel Information Council, and I think there is certainly some varied opinions about it, but there does seem to be good indication that the new approach that the Travel Information Council is taking holds some promise. We made some amendments to try and to be responsible with the dollars that are newly headed that direction, but it's certainly a new approach.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Callan. President Smith, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, I just want to add a thought on this.
We got it.
In my area, the Travel Information Council has spent endless hours reaching out to local constituents trying to figure out what does all this mean and how do we provide a positive experience for travelers. I want to echo what Senator Bates shared. We're missing an opportunity as Oregonians to put our best foot forward for the state. Over last summer, I had an opportunity to travel into Wyoming, and I'll tell you what a great way. They take great strides to showcase their state through those rest areas, and we're missing an opportunity here. So thank you for letting me share that thought.
Thank you, Representative.
Oh, sure.
Further discussion on the motion?
Just a quick.
Senator Nelson, please.
Wyoming, they use their natural resources.
Senator, yes, they do.
Give them an opening.
Thank you, Representative, for the opening. Thank you, Senator, for walking through it. Is there objection to the motion? See no objection. The motion carries. close work session, open work session on House Bill 4005. Representative McLean, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 4005 allows a tax credit for livestock killed by wolves. The tax credit would be reduced by any amount already received as compensation for the loss of livestock to wolves. The bill would limit the total amount of tax credits for livestock killed by wolves to $37,500 annually. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends House Bill 4005 be amended and reported out as due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries. Close work session. Open the work session on House Bill 4056. Representative Garrard, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. Just to explain to the committee, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. No plants, no endangered species. House Bill 4056 establishes a 16-member task force on STEM access and success to develop strategies to encourage students to study science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The task force is required to submit a report that may include recommendations for legislation to the Interim Legislative Committee on Education by October 1, 2012. The task force sunsets on the date of the convening of the 77th Oregon Legislative Assembly. The bill also establishes a STEM fund to be continuously appropriated to Oregon Student Access Commission for the purpose of providing scholarships to students to encourage study in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The bill allows the task force to accept grants, donations, contributions of gifts from any source for deposit in the STEM fund. At this time, no source for donations has been identified. If funded, OSAC will use existing staff and resources to administer the STEM fund. There is a minimal fiscal impact to the Legislative Administration Committee to staff the task force. This is a good bill, committee members. The Education Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 4056 be reported out, do pass.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Close work session, open work session on House Bill 4058. Senator Monroe, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 4058 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, or HEC, to convene a work group to examine and recommend adoption of strategies for reducing higher education textbook costs. The HEC is to go forward the work group recommendations to the Legislature Assembly by November 1 of 2012. The HEC is currently part of the Office of the Governor. There's a minimum fiscal impact to the Office of Governor for the convening of the work group. Your Education Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 4058 be reported out, do pass. In our discussions as a committee, we were appalled at the tremendous cost that students are having to pay for their textbooks today. It's becoming a major impediment to higher education, so we're hopeful that this study will find ways to reduce, perhaps by half, the cost of textbooks for our college students.
Thank you, Senator. Is there a discussion on the motion in front of us? Is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries. Close work session, open work session on House Bill 4077. Senator Monroe, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 4077 has to do with teen dating violence. It would require school district boards to adopt a policy stating that teen dating violence is unacceptable and is prohibited, and that each student has the right to a safe learning environment. Also, they would be required to establish procedures for the manner in which employees of the school are to respond to incidents of teen dating violence that take place at school, on school grounds, at school-sponsored activities, or in vehicles used for school-provided transportation. and also to incorporate age-appropriate education about teen dating violence for students in grades 7 through 12 and for school employees responsible for receiving reports related to harassment, intimidation, and bullying, and also to identify by job title the school officials who are responsible for receiving reports related to teen dating violence, and to notify students and parents of the teen dating violence policy adopted by the school board. The bill permits the Department of Justice to use monies in the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund to support services, programs, and curricula to educate and inform students in grades 7 through 12 about teen dating violence. The bill also allows the Department of Human Services to use the Domestic Violence Fund to make grants and enter into contracts to prevent teen dating violence. Currently, the Domestic Violence Fund and the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund are used to subsidize crisis lines, shelters, and support services for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. The bill expands allowable uses of these funds to teen dating violence programs and services. Passage of this bill will have no bottom line budgetary impact on the Department of Justice and the Department of Human Services. Your Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 4077 be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Is there discussion on this motion? Representative Thatcher, please.
Thank you. Senator Monroe, you were saying that it has no budgetary impact for basically the state, but was there any discussion about impacts on the schools? You mentioned grants. Will that make them whole in their implementation of this?
We actually talked about this in subcommittee and determined that there would not be any major cost to school districts. They are required to have a plan, and of course that's going to take some personnel time and cost, but it shouldn't be onerous in any way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senator, what happens if a school district fails to comply?
Well, we actually didn't talk about that, but obviously school districts are required to do certain things by the Department of Education that essentially is their boss. And I would think if they didn't comply, that the Department of Education would write them a nice letter, say, please comply. And if they still didn't comply, eventually, some funds could be withheld.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Senator Whitson, please.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. This bill allows the expanded new uses of Department of Justice and DHS domestic violence funds. Will this have a negative effect on the funding for crisis lines, shelters, and support services for survivors of domestic violence that are currently supported by these funds?
We shall bring up the awful analyst and ask that question.
Chair Buckley, Senator Wichit, Kento, LFO office. Yes, it would leave at the discretion of DHS and the Department of Justice on how they would use those funds.
So you want to follow? Could you get your questions?
Could you quantify the potential reductions and the effects that they would have on those services that are already currently funded with those two domestic violence funds?
Co-Chair Buckley, Senator Whitsitt, we did not ask the department to quantify because it would all depend on the number of grants they would receive and how they would divide up that grant. So it would be indeterminate until they know the number of grants within a biennium.
Thank you. Just a comment. It seems like we're thinning the soup here. We're creating a new program without any funding. And I'm not at all certain that the current programs are overfunded in any means.
Thank you. Senator Nelson and Senator Monroe. Senator Nelson, please.
Yes, thank you. This is a memory of former Senator Vern Duncan, who was also the state superintendent of schools for, 12 or 14 or 16 years. You'd see bills like this come on the floor of the Senate, and you'd say, what are we doing this for? I mean, it's another mandate. I don't know, is it funded? People are bringing things up. I mean, there's a fellow that had, you know, lots of years, and he would say, you know, schools try to take care of these things the best they can, but we're putting way too much responsibility on schools to be, you know, to be sort of the watchdogs of conduct, and you know, we ought to put a little trust in the community folks and the people that are running schools that they can handle these problems. I'm not sure I'm going to vote on this thing. I'm just saying, what are we doing this for?
All right, I get Senator Monroe and Senator Bates. Senator Monroe, please.
This measure is designed to be preventative. We found, and the evidence was overwhelming, that teen dating violence often leads to domestic violence, the kinds of things that are currently funded under this particular fund, and that if we can prevent that through this program, if we can reduce the teen dating violence or eliminate teen dating violence, that it will significantly reduce domestic violence on down the road, perhaps not very far down the road. And therefore, we think that this is an appropriate use of this fund and actually will make for a more efficient system that will reduce overall domestic violence, which is a major, major problem. We took evidence, for example, that the number two cause of death for women under 50 is being killed by their domestic partner. That's pretty dramatic. Only automobile accidents kill more women under 50. And so if we can, through this educational program, through instilling in our young people that teen violence, teen dating violence is unacceptable, and show them why it is unacceptable, perhaps it will reduce the overall domestic violence in our society.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bates, please.
Thank you. Senator Monroe, just a quick question. I don't know if this was discussed in committee or not. It reminds me of an issue we had in a school board one time when I was school board. I was on the school board. We had some very inappropriate behavior by some boys against some girls in the school. It concerned sexual things. The attitude of the principal, who was fired over it, and the local police officer was boys will be boys. It was very inappropriate behavior. And the parents of the girls were very upset by it and felt they had, at that point, no legal standing to sue the district or the school for what was going on. Would this open it up to a possibility of this becoming a situation where a school could be sued if they didn't support a program that prevented or at least discussed or didn't accept any kind of violence towards girls?
Actually,
it could be boys too.
I served a decade on
it. Was there a discussion about that in committee?
Yes, there was a discussion about that. And your subcommittee believes that this will actually reduce the likelihood of those suits, because the school district will actually have a policy of prohibiting teen dating violence. And since they have a policy intact, they would be less likely to be sued than if they had no policy at all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, please.
Thank you. I will be very brief. Today on the House floor, we heard stirring testimony about the work of Justice Betty Roberts in this building, about women leadership and how to have a safe society for all genders. And I would say, as being a school principal, there were multiple times where we did not have a resource to go to help students, male or female, particularly at the secondary level. There are some now very good places. Liberty House here in Salem does incredible interventions for children, and yet we need to have this prevention talked about, that what is unacceptable. I'll tell you just briefly, I had a sixth grader that was dating a 26-year-old man, and she came to me and told me she was pregnant. And I told her if she reported anything to me that I'd have to, you know, tell the authorities. Well, she's still mad at me to this day that I reported it, because obviously the 26-year-old man left for high ground somewhere. Our children need to know who to report to and how to do it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith, please.
No, thank you.
Nothing? Further discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Senator Nelson? Senator Whitsitt? There's only two I have. Motion carries. Close the work session. Open work session on House Bill 4084. Senator Bates, are you taking this one for Senator Winters?
Yes. Senator Winters couldn't be with us this afternoon. And for those of you who don't know, I look quite a bit different than she does, so if you can't tell the difference, you need your eyes checked. House Bill 4084 provides a six-year statute of limitations for certain felonies, including aggravated theft, theft by extortion, robbery, forgery, fraudulent use of credit cards, and identity theft when the victim is 65 years of age or older. The bill also stipulates that a court may not set aside a conviction for criminal mistreatment in the first or second degree if the victim was 65 years of age or older at the time of the offense. The bill requires health care providers and financial institutions to allow law enforcement access to certain protected health information and financial records without the consent of the person if there is an investigation into abuse being conducted. To address privacy concerns, the -12 amendments specify that financial institutions are only required to disclose financial records pursuant to a subpoena issued by a court or on behalf of a grand jury. The amendment also repeals on June 20, 2015, these provisions requiring financial institutions and health care providers to provide law enforcement agency access to certain information. In addition, the bill establishes a six-member Resident Safety Review Council charged with reviewing information from abuse cases investigated by the Department of Human Services and/or law enforcement agencies. The council is directed to perform root cause analysis of the information to determine whether the occurrence of alleged abuse should be classified as acts of abuse or adverse events. The bill sunsets the council on June 30, 2013. The bill earmarks up to $300,000 from the Quality Care Fund to support the work of the council. The Quality Care Fund consists of licensing fees and civil penalties collected from long-term care facilities, residential facilities, and adult foster homes. Current statutes continuously appropriate monies in the Quality Care Fund to the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority for training, technical assistance, quality improvement initiatives, and licensing activities to meet high standards for quality care in long-term care facilities, residential facilities, and adult foster homes. The -12 amendment includes a $300,000 other fund expenditure limitation to the Department of Human Services to support the work of the Council. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 4084 be amended and reported out, do pass as amended. Colleagues, there is a significant controversy in this bill, which we've been discussing, and I'm sure we're going to discuss here in a few minutes. It's been discussed in the halls, it's been discussed in the caucuses, and it's been discussed in multiple committees, and when the work group put this bill together. And I'm going to try to start that conversation off very quickly. The information that you need in a case in which there's elder abuse is usually an elder person who is partially demented or confused. Generally speaking, the financial information you need, you can get through a subpoena, and there's not a rush to get that. There's no immediate danger in most cases. And the vast majority of these cases, from my information, and also as my position as a physician in helping these people, is that's the most of the cases. There is a small percentage of cases, however, that represent actual injury or abuse physically to the individual, or even emotional abuse to the individual. Those cases are more emergent. They need to be dealt with immediately sometimes, and they are obviously much more dangerous to the individual. This bill, as I understand it, it's been explained to me and I've read it, actually opens up medical records in those people without a subpoena from a court. The oversight is supplied by the police agency going after the information and by DHS. Under state law, they work together to do this. There is a counterpoint when they do this together. But also, the Senate Judiciary Committee has already put this on their agenda for December of this year to review this very carefully to be certain as much as possible that there's not been abuse as far as record releases on these individuals, and that the spirit of the law, the intent of this law of protecting people from immediate abuse, either physically or emotionally, can be dealt with and taken care of. Emergency room physicians and nurses are concerned that they want this bill passed. They commonly see these people in emergency rooms and are sometimes stymied by giving the information to the police officer involved to help that person be put someplace that's safe. It happens also in doctor's offices where we see someone come in with a broken arm or unexplained laceration, and the care provider is sitting there, and the person you're dealing with is either confused or scared to say anything. So this is a very real issue in our society, and that's why we're bringing it forward, even though this is only a four-week session. This is an ongoing problem. It's worsening as our population, the number of people, I should say our population is aging, but the people over 65 as a group are getting a larger percentage of the population. We're seeing this more and more all the time. That's why I'm supporting this bill, but I do have some concerns about that part of the bill, which I'm speaking to. It's a good bill. It's been carefully vetted and worked on, and we understand that we're going to watch it very carefully to make sure that these records, these medical records that are released, are pertinent to the case and that we do what we need to do for these people. I well know that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That is, I'm not expecting this bill to go in that direction. So I'm very supportive of this bill. It's been the good work of a lot of people here. We're very concerned about abuse to seniors, and both of them will have support in this committee. On the other hand, I do understand there's potential here that we have to look at very carefully, and may have to put some more sideboards on this before we're through. But this bill needs to go out, and we need to protect these people. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion, Senator Gillette, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, I vote no probably as much or more than anybody in this committee. This is a good bill, and it's a good cause. The HIPAA laws, if that's the excuse we're using, I think is not well-founded. Most of these patients that we're talking about are not 100% lucid patients. So, and that's the reason that the abuse can take place. So, yeah, there might need to be some sideboards later on down the road, but I don't see that as a reason to sideline this bill. I think it's a good cause, and I think we need to vote yes.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Gerard, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. Several years ago, I was the director of my senior center in Klamath County. Part of that position included being a member of the Elder Abuse Task Force in my area. And so I was made privy to police information on a monthly basis. What was overwhelming to me on the number of seniors who were undergoing abuse is that probably half of them were being abused by their own families. And that brought up the most difficult problem, that some of those members of the family could stop police from getting the information they needed. This is, as the Senator just said, this is a good bill, and we need to do it. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Nolan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I applaud all the efforts of the people who have really looked into ways to protect truly vulnerable senior citizens, as I'm supportive of efforts to protect other vulnerable citizens here, regardless of their age. If I might, Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to ask the carrier or someone from an appropriate agency how... Forgive my ignorance about the underlying law, but how can we be certain that the powers that this bill grants are used only for protecting citizens who are not capable of granting informed consent on their own behalf?
That's really, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Now, Representative Nolan, that's really the key question, and I appreciate that the question. I will tell you this, there's no certainty in this world, I don't think, about anything. We can't get things perfectly right to start off. The language in this bill is essentially the same language that we used for children who were abused or at risk of abuse, and that has been in place for many, many, many years and has worked extremely well. The same people who work on those situations will be essentially working on these situations. The track record is excellent. We will continue to watch this program carefully and go forward from there. If we had to get a subpoena every time we had an abused child in our hands, either in my office or in an emergency room, we would be putting countless children over and over again at risk. We are now doing that with our seniors, and it happens every day. I can't give you absolute certainty that there's been judicial oversight in these cases, because it won't happen immediately, and it's something we have to look at later. You can get this information with this bill without having a subpoena from a grand jury or from a judge, but it's the urgent nature of this that makes this bill so important to pass the way it is. But my answer to you is, I can't give you that certainty. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you about it. There may be somebody else who can come forward from the agency or from judiciary to give you a better answer than I just did, and if they would, I'd have them step forward.
Would you like a different or a more elaborate answer?
I don't want to slow down the process here, but I do think this is an important consideration. And for me, it is a weighing of good protections, the weighing of protections for people who are victimized and unable to defend themselves against the potential that someone who isn't compromised or is mentally competent might somehow get swept in here. And I'm just weighing that. If there's no one here, I'm not seeing anyone move forward with this. I will do that offline.
I'd like to ask Representative Simpson's
response. Great.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And members of the committee, I also was concerned about, since I'm approaching 65 in a few years, this concept that possibly the police department or a police officer could issue their own subpoena and go in and have access to financial records without notifying the individual whose records they are, even though there's been no proceeding about competency or anything like that. And so this bill is amended in a way that says that there must, that actually it says that a person who is alleged victim of an investigation, so there has to be an investigation underway in accordance with a subpoena issued by a court or on behalf of a grand jury. And so I was satisfied that since the police department would have to go to a judicial officer before they would be able to move forward with the subpoena, that there is this check and balance. I did not feel comfortable when the police department could issue its own subpoena to do this, and so that has been changed in this amended bill.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion on the motion. Senator Whitsitt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I fear that Representative Nolan and I are becoming an odd couple. But I share...
I'm the only one who's odd.
I share her concerns deeply. I think this is a well-intended bill, and I think it really needs to move forward. I can think of three different people... Two distant family members, and one old friend, older ladies who became incapacitated and were independently wealthy, and by the time they died, they were destitute because their families had looted them. So, I mean, and this, Section 10 takes care of that, I believe it does. But Section 6 and Section 8, applying to the medical records, is silent on the issue, totally silent on the issue. And I would respectfully request that the co-chairs ask at least Legislative Council, if not the Department of Justice, regarding the constitutionality of this bill as currently written, relating to probable cause and search and seizure.
Thank you, Senator. Is there additional discussion on this motion? Is there objection to the motion?
I'm not going to object, but I will... maintain the right to vote differently on the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Motion carries. Close the work session. Open work session on House Bill 4172. Senator Bates, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 4172 authorized the establishment of a program to use retired Oregon State Police troopers who are on active reserve to enforce laws designed to discourage use of tobacco products, specifically for those under the age of 18. Initial funding would come from the Tobacco Reduction Use Account, or TURA. The bill also authorized the Oregon Health Authority to apply for federal and other sources of funds for the program. Funds of the program are to be deposited in the new State Police Tobacco Law Enforcement Fund. OHA is already working with the federal government to pursue other funding for this program. The State Police will return to the Emergency Board or Legislature for expenditure limitations when the final amount of funding is known. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 4172 be reported out due pass.
You barely made it, Senator. Thank you.
Man, it was tough.
Is there discussion on this motion? Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. Close work session. Open a work session on the federal grant application. Senator Edwards, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends that the Joint Committee on Ways and Means approve retroactively the submission of five federal grant applications totaling over $2.2 million to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for endangered species conservation and monitoring projects. The department is seeking funding from the Federal Cooperative Endangered Species Conservation Fund. Only state fish and wildlife agencies are eligible for grants from this program. Grant applications were due January 27, 2012. The department submitted a 10-day notification letter on January 10, 2012, with the intention of seeking retroactive approval to apply during the 2012 session. The department reports no additional position authority will be required to complete the grant projects. The five projects are $25,000 for snowy plover monitoring, $60,000 for wolverine monitoring in the Cascade Mountain Range, $155,000 for gray wolf monitoring and research to increase use of non-lethal and preventative measures designed to reduce wolf conflicts with livestock, and research to evaluate impacts of wolves on other native species, $940,000 for marble murrelet habitat acquisition on behalf of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The grant is for the acquisition of the 160-acre Vandercook Forest, which is adjacent to OPRD's Beaver Creek State Natural Area on the coast, and $1,057,496 for permanent conservation easement to protect in-stream water rights to benefit Lost River suckers and short-nosed suckers that have been leased from the landowner for the same purpose over the last 8 years. I would note, in addition to the information here on the pony, further research revealed that it is not just for suckers, but it is also for native red band rainbow trout and bull trout. Your Natural Resource Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Representative. Discussion on the motion. Senator Whitsitt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. First, I want to thank the co-chairs for holding this over for time for a constituent of mine and of Representative McLean's to have an opportunity to review this. His concerns regarded the conservation easement and the water transfer. My constituent owns the only other ranch supplied on this ditch, and it's a 60-40 split. He owns 60% of the water. The Jaycox ranch owns the other 40%. The ditch was actually constructed by our constituent's great-grandfather in 1891. The Jaycox water is currently transferred in-stream on a temporary lease, and our constituent had contested that original transfer and had a number of contingencies put on that transfer in order so that it didn't injure him or cause expansion. He was unaware of this conservation easement or the proposed transfer, even though he owns the ditch, and he wasn't made aware of it until I called him the night before that that meeting. Since that time, he has had time to consult his legal counsel and has determined that he will maintain his right to contest the any transfer that comes out of this in the future in the same manner that he was able to do the current one. And so for that matter, he doesn't removed his concerns, or I didn't say removed his concerns, he stood down. So I thank you for the opportunity for our constituent to actually look into this. I think a second thing that needs to be brought up is that this might be sort of systematic of what we've been doing on a lot of these grants. I don't think we're doing a good enough job vetting them. We should understand the consequences before we deal the cards. I will be a no on this, not for that reason, but for a philosophical reason that I'm always no on these, because we are acquiring land or conservation easements and taking productive land out of production. But from the standpoint of the specific number five grant, the constituent has stood down on that issue.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Berger, please.
Yes, I guess my question is, in holding this over, did it cause these to be applied for retroactively, or were they already applied for before you held it over?
Senator, we only held it over for one day, so I think or 2 days. So I think we're still in the same status as we were previously.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion? I'll go with President McLean first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Whitsitt, I think, was very clear about the surprise that took place amongst our constituent, and that is really unfortunate, and I think paints our agency in a bad light. I would like to compliment our co-chair, Natural Resources, Senator Edwards, for putting so much time into this. And as I did in the sub, I'm going to support it because our constituent has had time to look at it and vet it, and at this point is preserving rights to contest. But I agree with Senator Whitsitt, and for those of us who represent vast rural areas that these grants affect, there needs to be a better job letting folks know what's up, who's going to be affected. And when we are given a grant with very little time to look at, and it affects, you know, real people out there, it really puts us in a tight spot. And I'm thankful for the co-chairs for pulling it and giving us more time, for Senator Edwards for vetting it and the like. But if not for your good graces, it really would have been an injustice pulled over on our constituent. Thankfully, he's looked at it, and again, he's preserved his rights going forward. I just would like to say for the record, I really do think these grants in natural resource areas need more time to us, need a better job getting out there talking to the people they affect in our rural areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Your words are well taken, both the Senator and your words, Representative. I think you make a great case that communication is the least that we can do to people who are impacted by the moves we make. Representative Richardson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I will be opposing this bill. I think that it's inappropriate at these times to have the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife contributing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash toward these, matching the federal funds, and the federal funds are our dollars as well as any others. And I think that although the snowy plover may be a wonderful bird and the gray wolves may need monitoring, that we are in times when we've got to make better choices on how we spend our money. And I also object to having us continue to pull private property out of the real property tax base. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Would it be possible to have staff come up? I have a question.
It looks like it's very possible. Can you tell me more possible by the moment?
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you coming up. Can we talk about item number 3 of the 5 projects, and that's the gray wolf monitoring? Can you just take a moment and walk us through what ODFW is anticipating the use, how they're going to spend the $155,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, it's for a 3-phase project to increase the monitoring, increase the use of non-lethal and preventive measures designed to reduce wolf conflicts with livestock, and research to evaluate impacts of wolves on native species. I have a lot more detail from their work plan they submitted, but that's the gist of it. They'll be using, the match will be met with in-kind contributions from the department. In essence, just the work that they're already doing on the wolf plan will be used as match for the federal grant for any of the, if they're successful in getting this grant.
If I can just follow up really quick, Mr. Co-Chair.
Please.
Thank you. I'm struggling with this because if you talk to the cattlemen up in the Wallowa County area, they're going to share with you that they want additional monitoring of the wolves so they know where the wolves are moving to and from. And so I see that as a positive. What I'm struggling with is trying to figure out how much research is going to be dedicated to, how much is going to be spent on research versus how much is going to be spent on monitoring. Did they share with you any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I have to get back to you on that. Okay. Specific detail.
Can I just ask one question?
Please.
Was there any public testimony on these 5 projects in support or against?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there was no public testimony. This was a work session.
Thank you, sir.
Go to Senator Edwards, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I can try to answer some of Representative Smith's questions. I'm by no means the expert.
Sure.
When these
grants, this grant application first came through the subcommittee. We, you know, we opened it up. The department came forward. They testified. We tried to kind of get some questions going, and the subcommittee didn't have as many questions as have been raised since then. And so immediately after the work session, I went up to them and I said, could you guys come see me in my office? Because I guarantee this is just not going to fly through full committee. I mean, we've got wolverines, and we've got wolves, and we've got Klamath water, and marble murrelets, and snowy plovers. There's no way that this is just going to fly through the full committee without, you know, some questions. So they spent about 45 minutes with me, and we went through each piece. So I don't have a lot of detail, but I have a little bit more information. What they shared with me, or and how they characterized this particular piece, was that, and again, I am not the expert on this topic by any means, but they shared with me that they need to do monitoring, and you know, when they find a wolf pack, and apparently there is, you know, they are currently. They are federally listed west of a certain point, but they believe that there is a pack there, and so they want to identify the pack. And when they identify packs in new areas, then they try to collar some animals, and then those collars are used. There are, you know, the radio collars, and it's my understanding that those radio collars also work in conjunction with non-lethal means of scaring the bejesus out of wolves. You know, and I'm not exactly sure how that works, but
it's a technical term.
Yeah. So it's the monitoring is necessary in order to be able to delist federally, and that has to happen before the wolf plan can be implemented, which it's my understanding is something that agricultural interests are wanting to see.
Thank you. Just as a follow-up. Thank you, Senator. I'm really uneasy, but I'm going to cast an eye vote on this because additional monitoring of the gray wolf is needed by those in the livestock industry, and I'm going to anticipate that ODFW's intention is to enhance that monitoring of the wolf. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Callan, and Representative Callan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of the conversation that's been going on, I felt like I needed to speak in support of the item on this list that's fairly significant, but no one has mentioned yet, and that is the acquisition of the acreage adjacent to the Parks and Recreation Department's newest natural area, the Beaver Creek State Natural Area on the coast. And in response to a comment about concerns about taking land out of active production, I want to make it clear that this land is in no way suitable for forest practices. I'm very familiar with the piece of property that was acquired for the state natural area and the surrounding areas, which are basically used a lot for the kayaking and some of those things. It's a wetland area. It's not an area that could be used for anything else. It's a very appropriate addition to this particular natural area and could meet some of the habitat requirements that we have out there. So I felt like we needed to take note of a very valuable acquisition in this piece.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Freeman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I won't take long, but I'm going to be a no on this, specifically because there's all these different topics all in one question, and I find that very frustrating. There's parts of this that actually, you know, the wolf monitoring and stuff that might be okay, but some of the other stuff is, in my mind, not connected and should be separate issues.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Senator Rod, please.
Oh, thank you. Colleagues, I've done a 180 on this bill, and that's because I received a phone call concerning number 5. Trust me, I'm not a supporter of the Lost River suckers or the short-nosed suckers. But what's really happened is for 8 years, OWEB has paid for this diversion. So the state's already paying for the diversion, and the reason that it's diverted is to prevent water right constriction to those landowners because of the Endangered Species Act. So again, I think this is the way it's supposed to function. So at least for number five, I really think that this is a really good bill. I do share some of the concerns of Representative Freeman that maybe the Wolverine and some of the other ones are might not be to the same degree of support. So from now on, maybe we could get these separated out so that we could vote on them independently, because I think each one it needs to write on its own merits, but I will be an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Want to do a roll call?
Yeah, do a roll call.
Ms. Rocco, if you would, please.
Senator Biggs?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
No.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Aye.
Senator Edwards?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
No.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Girard?
No.
Vice Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Richardson?
No.
Co-Chair Buckley?
Aye.
That motion carries.
Close the work session. Thank you, colleagues. Open work session on agency reports, Department of Administrative Services. Representative Girard, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Joint Committee on Ways and Means acknowledge receipt of the report on compensation plan changes and position allocations from the Department of Administrative Services.
Right, five federal grant applications. Yeah, you might be right.
The report covers bargaining agreements and compensation plan changes for the Association of Oregon Correctional Employees, the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Criminal Investigator Association, Executive Service Employees, Unclassified Excluded Employees, Management Service Employees, and Unrepresented Employees. All of the sections include salary increases except for the Oregon State Police Officers Association. The agreements all have a provision that require employees to pay 5% of the cost of their health, dental, and basic life benefits in plan year 2012 and 2013. Most of the agreements also contain language that subsidizes those costs for employees below a certain salary level. There is no mention of furlough days or implementation of step increases in the report, but they are included in the agreements. The total cost of the compensation plan changes included in this report is about $7 million general fund and $20 million total funds for the 2011-13 biennium. The cost for these changes will increase to about $14.8 million general fund and $41.7 million total funds for the 13-15 biennium. General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries. Close work session. Open work session. Oregon State Library. Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Joint Committee on Ways and Means acknowledge receipt of a budget note report on the consolidation and improvement of library and archives services. The budget note requested that the Governor's Office, Secretary of State, and the Chief Justice convene a work group to address a number of issues, including consolidating services, increasing the utilization of digital resources, eliminating the duplication of services, developing public-private partnerships, and developing a more cost-effective delivery of the Talking Books and Braille Services program. Secretary of State Brown chaired the work group established to address the budget note. The work group met repeatedly during the summer and fall following the 2011 session. The final report identifies 27 recommended actions and identifies an additional 11 actions that the work group considered but did not recommend. The process that the Secretary of State used to meet the requirements of the budget note was organized and impressive. However, while the work group satisfied the minimal requirements of the budget note, it did not present a specific plan to move forward with its recommendations. The General Government Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report with the understanding that the report be reviewed and considered by the State and Local Government Efficiency Task Force.
Thank you, Representative. Discussion on the motion. Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you. I appreciate the time that was put in, and I support the motion and agree with the referral to the Efficiency Task Force. But I just want to say in this forum, I was startled as we got into this in the 2011 session. I was startled by the voluminous research that was being done, both the type and the quantity of services provided by the government research part of the State Library. We got contradictory reports from the outgoing State Librarian and the incoming State Librarian about the discipline and rigor exercised before research was conducted and charged to an agency. And based on some of the subjects researched by the professional staff, I cannot fathom a nexus between agency mission and routine agency work and some of the esoteric subject matter that was being researched and studied. And so I have respectfully asked the co-chairs to consider a budget note that might help tighten that sieve. And this is a subject that I think we ought to, as a body, continue to be aware of and scrutinize.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Hearing none, is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries. Colleagues, I need to reopen a work session momentarily on Senate Bill 1543. Representative Thatcher, if you would like to declare a conflict of interest, you may. I believe you're part of a large enough pool, but as out of an abundance of caution, if you would like to.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It isn't a big world of people that bid on public works contracts as far as highway transportation projects. So I did want to state that because I have a contracting company and a supply and equipment company that might be supplying labor, equipment, materials, and supplies possibly on one of these jobs and may stand to make or lose money. And just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. So noted. Mr. Rocco, on schedule, community members are standing by, but you anticipate, what do you anticipate for the rest of the day, sir?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not anticipating much for the rest of the day at this point, but I need to go back to my office and check emails.
All right, very good. So would it be safe for us to ask our colleagues here to check their emails by?
We can send out a message very soon to members of the committee to let them know what to expect the rest of this day.
Thank you. So noted, members. Is there anything else? That's it. Nope, we're good. All right, thank you for your time and consideration. Should I recess for the time being then, Ms. Rutgers, in case we need to come back tonight? No, we are adjourned.
Bye.